You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 28th, 2018. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where our election recount funds are always properly accounted for, it's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, guys.
So you mean you don't have five girlfriends out there all over campaign land? You're using campaign funds for liquor and hotel rooms
or travel or going to Green Party conferences or I'm sort of tipping my hand that we're going to talk a little bit about the amazing Jill Stein slush fund later in the podcast. But now we should talk about something else, Blue Gal.
Well, yeah, we should. And also I wrote about Duncan Hunter today because he's the throw the wife under the bus over the campaign funds thing. So we'll
get to
all
because,
that.
It's a pity because, you know, he has such good cookie batter, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
We want to thank everyone who has sent Christmas cards and contributions over the holidays. And to let you know, it is not too late to send me a Christmas card. I love getting belated Christmas cards.
I do too.
And we are going to end the GoFundMe on December 31st, this Monday. I don't want to get into the 2019 tax year with GoFundMe stuff. So we're going to shut it down at midnight on the 31st of December.
And begin our legal defense fund on December January 1st. No? No? Okay.
No, we don't. Okay. We actually don't need a legal defense fund.
No, we don't.
You know, part of the, it's a big advantage when you're not dealing with multi-million dollar slush funds.
Yeah.
That's one of the big advantages, right?
Yes, it is.
So yeah, we're not dealing with that, but we are very grateful to everyone who has contributed. We've also gotten some very nice gifts in the mail. I particularly was tickled by the one where someone sent you a little bottle of scotch and me a yarn gift certificate. So we both got our drugs.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And we enjoyed them thoroughly.
So thank you very much for everybody who sent us something. It's not too late. But for the GoFundMe for my medical bills, which is on our website, and it's also at the top of my Twitter stream. Mm-hmm. I've pinned it to the top, at Blue Gal. You can find the link there. If you want to help me pay off my medical bills, we are getting close to the goal. I think we were at 70% last time I checked. So that's amazing. Thank you very much for that. And it's not too late, but it will be too late after Monday. So Thank you very much for doing that. Drift Glass, we also want to highlight a fake advertiser.
Yes, we do. Speaking of the end of the year, this week is once again brought to you by our favorite presenting sponsor. Most prosperous one, really. Most profitable by every measure. Where the good Lord split you, emergency farewell party supplies. 2018 was a shitty year that ended on a hopeful note, so buy it a sheet cake and send it on its way to history books. This week's offer code is Prague Spring.
Prague Spring.
Prague Spring.
As in a cell phone signal that sprung right off of a cell phone tower outside of Prague, right?
Yes. That apparently belonged to a guy named Michael Cohen. Might have been a different Michael Cohen.
No, it wasn't a different Michael Cohen.
Or different, no? No? Okay, again, this has not been independently verified by the Professional Left because we don't do shit like that. We're just kind of a rip and read service, rip and read and interpret sort of the artistic merits of each story. Uh-huh. But it does look a lot like 2019 is going to be a hell of a ride.
Yeah, I can say that. I did love the note we got from someone saying, I just can't wait for you guys to cover the hearings.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I thought, oh yeah, we're going to get to do that in the coming year. So, $5. You better coffee us up, folks, if you want to hear us laugh our way through the House Oversight Committee hearings. We're looking forward to that too.
We're going
to
call it slow burn.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. It's already been done. The real time coverage of I don't know what we're going to call it.
I like to call it speed burn. Actually,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, burn bag or something like that.
Let's burn through these, particularly these cabinet members.
Oh,
God. Starting with Betsy DeVos and moving on. So, all right. So we've got stuff to talk about today. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
This is the last year, the last episode of the year, because it's the last Friday of the year. And as you know, we pride ourselves in not missing an episode. And so this is not a best of or a compilation or any. This is a fresh, hot show just for you guys.
Yes.
And we want to talk about a fellow blogger first, named Batoccio.
Yes.
Over he's at, had quite a week, and we're very proud of him.
Batoccio is over at Vagabond Scholar. Batoccio is one of the bloggers of the old school, very old school.
He's old school blogger, yeah.
We have known him. We've met him in real life. He's just a wonderful, kind, gentle, ferocious human being, and we're proud to call him our friend. And every year, for many years now, he has done the Jonathan Swift annual blogger post, a summary of the best of the smaller blogs as nominated by the smaller blogs themselves.
Right. And Jonathan Swift was another old school blogger.
He was.
Who passed away. His first name was Al. And he was a friend to many and certainly a supporter of small blogs. And he did this. And Batoccio picked up the mantle from him when he passed away. So, and Batoccio's done it every year since. And that post is up at Vagabond Scholar. And you should go and take a look at it.
This is back when the liberal blogosphere was a more of a community probably than it is now.
Yeah. I think that's fair to say. Although I did like that. It seems like the beginning of every show in the past few weeks, you've mentioned Charlie Pierce, but Charlie Pierce mentioned you on Twitter this week.
He did. By the way, I have a nice winter cold. If you can't tell, I sound a little bit.
Oh, we like both Tom do. Waits. Everybody.
Right in my chest and in my throat. So if you hear something that sounds a lot like, Betty Davis at 80, that would be me.
Yes.
I'm going to just lean into it and go with it.
Yeah.
He has a monster post over at Digby's place over at Hullabaloo.
Batoccio does. Right.
But no, I
wanted to get back to Charlie Pierce because Charlie Pierce said, Driftglass, as Ezra Klein asked, you know, which single shingle bloggers do you read?
Yeah, old school. What about the old school bloggers, the single shingle, the independent bloggers? And I'm like, Ezra, first of all, you used to be a blogger. I mean, it really is kind of astonishing that Ezra Klein, who does his Vox does great work when it comes to graphs. And there's a couple people write for them.
And videos. They get to the real crux of a lot of issues via video as well. Yeah.
But he really has, you know, imbibed deeply of the Beltway, the sense of perpetual
astonishment. The largesse of the Beltway. Yes. Yeah.
Like, oh my God, Republicans are being so misbehaving. Oh my God, I was wrong about Paul Ryan all along. If only I'd been warned about Paul Ryan. Like, Jesus Christ, man. Now, I will say this. Ezra Klein, I met him. He was around in Chicago when I was working with a group to set up a manufacturing high school in Chicago, and he interviewed us for that issue. So I actually I knew Ezra back in the Chicago day when I think Chris Hayes was also in Chicago, shoe leather reporter for The Nation, I believe. So it's not like he doesn't know. I believe Ezra is also a participant in the great Journolist scandal.
That's real old news.
Yeah. How you know. That's how you know you're independent.
That's how you know the old school people.
Because we were the ones who were never invited to the Journolist.
I was invited, actually. Oh, yeah. You didn't know that about me.
She always does this. She throws her Harvard degree and her invitation to Journolist up in my face and makes me feel sad.
Yeah. It was no big deal.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No.
Batoccio, though, has a post
monster,
not just the Jonathan Swift post, another post about conservatism.
Yeah, it's
up at Digby's blog, which is another old school single shingle blogger. We're going to town this week.
Yeah,
everything old is new again, and I think that's just because we are entering the Watergate era again.
We are.
And so
old. I remember when Digby had a comment section.
Yeah. This is kidding. We're really going down memory lane anyway.
We're
going to do a best of show. We're just doing an old fart show is what we're doing here.
And I would have included my profoundest kudos and strongest recommendations in the comment section of Atocha's post, because it is a monster, a comprehensive, all-inclusive tapestry that pulls in all the threads you could ever want. It's something, it's one of those posts you want to carry around in your back pocket.
Right.
For when, let's say you have a really nationally recognized podcast and you're interviewing a conservative who starts to lie to you about shit. You could either backpedal and go humana, 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 or you could come armed with something like Patocio's post and say, no, that's what you're saying is bullshit. Boom, 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 and push back at them. Because right now it's really kind of important that we not, that we recognize that we're in a war of sorts, and it's time to stop with the quibbling and the fence sitting and the maybe we can all get along, maybe we can find common ground. No, pick a side or step aside. That's the place we're at now. But we're going to put a post link to Batocho's, both the John Swift summary and Batocho's monumental conservatism post up at the podcast site and our individual websites. And I want to talk about art and freedom and Ursula K. Le Guin for a minute.
All right, go right ahead.
Let's start with art and freedom first. You and I sojourned for a day. We took a quick trip to an art museum.
We did. We went to the St. Louis Museum of Art, or SLAM, the St. Louis Art Museum, slam.org, and saw some prints from 1960 to today. And it's a special exhibit, and it was fantastic. We had a wonderful time.
We did. We had, and part of it was, this must have been months ago. We were looking at our calendars that were getting full, and realizing that, you know, life during wartime, which is what this feels like. I'm not contending that we're wounded or being shot at or anything like that, but we are having symptoms of people who are living during a traumatic period that doesn't seem to stop. We're having all the coping issues that I'm sure every one of you is having and millions of Americans are having. You got to go out and find a thing to do with your brain other than fretting about Donald Trump and the Republican Party and the future of the country and the future of the planet, frankly. You don't give up, but you got to find a way. And for us, we just said we have to go get drunk on art.
Right.
We have to. We have to go find a place that's just quiet and full of beautiful things that we can appreciate and laugh about and go, Jesus Christ, they put that up in an art museum?
Yes, there were a couple of those. There were a couple of them that we just went,
yes.
Really?
I will never understand Mark Rothko. There, I said it. I said it. I understand that people appreciate Mark Rothko. I appreciate their appreciation. There's no room for an argument here. This is a matter of taste. Right. But we saw many, many beautiful things, including commercial print, that were just amazing and lovely. And it did put me in mind, he said, speaking of nostalgically of Science Fiction University, which will be making a comeback this year, I really hope. It put me in mind of The Space Merchants.
Oh, yeah.
A book about advertising and the day advertising takes over the world. And most importantly, it put me in mind of the fact that in Mad Men, that there was a time during the 40s, 50s and 60s and on that people who might have otherwise found their way into writing romantic poetry or doing great, great sculptural works or great printed works went into advertising because you can make money doing that. Persuading people through visual media, through words, became an incredibly profitable thing to do. Now you were selling them crap, but that's where they went. And there's a whole passage in the Space Merchants about how this is what happened. And there are an alarming number, or not a surprise, because a otherwise surprising number of science fiction authors who worked in advertising. Because putting words together to persuade people of things is what advertising is. And just seeing the care and beauty of advertising that is done correctly, and then seeing how it is manipulated by artists who want to make a point. The whole wall of African-American ads.
Wig ads and
wig ads.
Skincare bleaching ads were posted
across
the wall. Yeah.
And they were all carefully manipulated, but they didn't lose their meaning.
Right.
But it had to be a wall full of them for you to be overwhelmed by what was being sold and to whom and why. But it was the idea that you can use art to do amazing things. And the difference between politicians and ad men who dabble in art, whether it's verbal or visual, and visual and verbal artists or sonnet makers or sculptors who become political. Those are two very different groups of people. And I happened across this article in Brain Pickings about Ursula Le Guin's impression. This is a speech she gave. Her impressions of the late Ursula Le Guin, I should say, of how to save books from profiteering and commodification. And this quote jumped out at me for this podcast. Any human power can be resisted and changed by human beings. Resistance and change often begin in art. Very often in our art, the art of words. To get fame and money for the sake of which I wrote it was necessary to hide the good and display the evil. That's it. She opens it with a quote from Leo Tolstoy. That's mm-hmm. the quote. Mm-hmm. And the idea that it falls to us, especially during these times, people who have a gift for visual or words or anything artistic, it falls to us now to look over the horizon and see the future as it could be. Both dystopically and hopefully, and tell people here and now what we see and how to get there mm-hmm. using our art, using our words, mm-hmm. And inspire people, make them feel like getting up in the morning and coming back to the fight and not giving up. And I find that just bathing in art for a day really refreshes my soul and makes me feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. And you and I had a lovely time. It struck me, though, going to that museum with you, that you and I get along really, really well.
Yeah, we do.
Our energy mm-hmm. level is almost exactly the same, and we could go through this exhibit and a couple of other exhibits and be ready to go. It also, every time I go into an art museum, I'm reminded yes. of my mother, as you know.
You bring your mother with you.
I bring my mother with me. My mother was an artist. My late mother was an artist. My dad's an artist. But going through a museum, my dad didn't talk much when he went to a museum, but my mother would talk about everything yes. she saw. And it was a remarkable week because Sister Wendy passed away this week.
I know.
And we always compared my mother going through the museum to Sister Wendy, but it was Sister Wendy with it meets Penthouse in a way yeah. because my mother knows every artist and who they slept with and how many illegitimate children they have. And was there a Mrs. Picasso? Yes, there was a Mrs. Picasso, but then there were many women who were not Mrs. Picasso.
Yeah, the way you describe her and the times I talked to her, she always seems slightly scandalized by her own knowledge.
Yes, she was. You know, I think she was scandalized, but she was also, she was a mixture, like every woman of her generation who yes. was born in the 30s, the late 30s. And mm-hmm. came of age in the 50s, then leading into the 60s, so that she wasn't a baby boomer. She was lost generation.
Yeah.
But the world twisted on her, where as she was going through high school, it was expected that you would become a teacher or a nurse, and then right. you would become a wife.
Right.
When she had me on her 24th birthday, every other girl who she graduated from high school with had already had a child. At 24, she was the old maid. She was the late bloomer having a child, her first child, at age 24. Mm-hmm. And then the world just turned on her in terms yep. of, you can be anything. You can do take over the world. You can, and her expectations for herself seemed a letdown. Like she might be letting down the revolution by just being a mother and a teacher.
Right.
And I think there's a whole generation of women who felt utterly betrayed by that. That
we got caught.
Right. Yeah, they got caught in this trap and mm-hmm. a trap of freedom. You know, it was no, we're going to burn our bras and we're going to be feminists now. And that's great, but you've left behind a generation of women who have a lot to offer and were not right. really given that opportunity. So
right.
anyway, she was in 1968 with three kids, and then she lost one. And it's a long story, but she had her ups and downs in life and going to an art museum with her was, as I say, Sister Wendy with all of the scandals that every artist that she came across had. And so it,
she would have been a much better docent than the one that was there.
And that poor guy. We poor saw guy. This docent, and he was a retiree who clearly loved the museum.
Yes.
But this show was out of his range. This yes. is modern prints from 1960 to the present. So, yeah. yes, they had Andy Warhol soup cans up there because you kind of have to. They had yeah. a lot of things up there that were political, that were
racial, cultural,
and off and countercultural. Right.
Right.
And he was out of his really, league.
They had like a Xerox manual.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was gorgeous. Yep. They had a book of fold out photographs of the Sunset Strip on both sides of the street that were just, this is how beautiful this basic function of presentation can
right.
be.
Right. Yeah.
And he was way
he was
out
just
of his
not, he was yeah. not there to talk about that. But
no.
So he would say things like, now there's not much to see here because this is minimalism.
Yeah. Moving on.
This is the yeah. one where he makes it with the dots. He made the painting yeah. with the dots. See?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, we see the dots. That's great.
See the dots. So.
And he didn't detract from
no,
it. It was
God
just
bless
kind of
him. He was
adorable.
Trying. He yeah. was really yeah. trying.
You're a volunteer on, you know, on a holiday right. coming in to right. take a bunch
the
of people
day
around
after
to
Christmas,
the museum.
Coming in to yeah. show people art. Yes. So.
Yeah.
Bless his heart, as my mother would yeah. say.
Well, and I want to point out that Ursula Le Guin was born on October 21st, 1929.
Yeah, yeah. And she was beautifully about being a mother.
Her yes, she
did.
Essays
about writing and motherhood are so worth reading. That being a mother and having children around your, you know, ankle biters around you, creating chaos while you're trying to put order on the page. And how that sharpens your writing and how improves your art. It's beautiful. It's well, I highly recommend reading her essays about writing. They're just amazing.
She also wrote science fiction, I understand.
Yeah, she did.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. just a little I'd like bit.
I'd like to close out with her with one more quote,
sure.
if I may. This is from also from her writing. Hard times are coming when we'll be wanting the voices of writers who can see alternatives to how we live now, can see through our fear-stricken society and its obsessive technologies to other ways of being, and even imagine real grounds for hope. We'll need writers who can remember freedom, poets, visionaries, realists of a larger reality. I love that last yeah. part. Realists of a larger reality.
Realists
That's
of a larger
what we
reality.
Need.
We need that. And you bring that every day, Driftglass, in your blog. I know you do.
Well, golly,
and,
Blue
and,
Gal, thank
and
you.
And again, thank you so much for being such a wonderful partner in life and for taking me to this art museum. And it was also a stressful week. Just taking a trip anywhere is just a little bit stressful, I think, for both of us. We're both kind of homebodies and getting out of your comfort zone a little bit when you go to another city and do stuff. And I just felt no pressure to tell you, oh, I'm kind of out of gas now. We got to go do something else.
Yep.
And then we came back and this was the day after Christmas. And then yesterday, Thursday, our power went out for 8 hours.
Yes. Boom.
And I was cranky as hell. I had to work. I had to write for Crooks and Liars yesterday. Our power was out. We had to find a cafe with power, make sure there was a power strip, make sure that I had earbuds, everything just to kind of get the day done. And I was in a bitchy mood because I didn't even want to work today, and here I was having to go someplace else. And you just kept calm and did your... He turns into a project manager at that point to manage all the stress. And yes. you did. You just had, okay, here's the power strip, here's the earbuds, here's the laptop, we're going here, we're going to do this. And you actually didn't even have to go with me, but you did, and you spent the afternoon together in a cafe.
Go back to the house, take the packages off the porch because we don't want to invite and just keep track of the outage map. We have an outage map, so make sure.
And the kids are gone. They're with their dad this this week, but apparently the girls are shopping all the sales online with their Christmas money. So we have all these every day. There's another box from makeup or body lotion or something. All their Christmas money is, I think, going to be gone by the time they get home. So, getting those packages off the porch, you did that in the rain and took care of everything. And I really appreciate you not taking my grumpy mood.
Oh, please.
Personally.
All while coughing up a lung.
Yes, you did that too.
And here's how I cope, Bluegill. I pack it all down, my resentments and rage down, into a tiny, tiny ball. And then I pour whiskey on it. And at some socially inappropriate occasion, I let it all come. At the art museum, I was going to start just screaming about Mark Rothko. Just like, fucking Rothko? This piece of shit? I had to, you know what? Seeing this piece of shit art in Mad Men ruined that series for me. Ruined it.
Ruined. I love that word. But I know I love that word.
I know, because ruined is irrevocable.
Irrevocable ruined. we're not going to get into how many times I've lived with the word ruined in my life.
No.
Anyway, good.
But that's what we did on our Christmas
vacation,
kids.
That was our kid-free week, was a day without power and a day to the art museum. We had a good time.
Yeah, we did. We did church, and there'd been a ton of funerals at church, so we did logistic stuff up for that.
Everybody's dying. Very busy. That's a terrible thing to say and then laugh about, but I am the titular head of the funeral committee, the funeral lunch committee at our church. Uh-huh. And the pastor has warned me several times that the Christmas season is also the passing away season.
It is.
And so it's the busiest season for him anyway, doing four services with 300 people apiece on Christmas Eve. And then funeral. And literally there have been four funerals in the past 7 days. So and that's just something to kind of keep in the background if you're seeing that in your life, or if you're going to see a lot of celebrities or whatever happens. You know, this is the time of year when people wait to pass away until their family, they get to see their family.
That's right.
It happens.
My dad passed away the day before Christmas.
Did he?
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So. Yep.
So.
It happened.
It happened.
You want to talk about Jill Stein's recount cash scam. And she spent some of her campaign funds in a very interesting trip.
Some of her allowance that she thinks she shouldn't have spent on. As you know, Jill Stein is personally responsible for Donald Trump being president. See what I did there?
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be glib about Donald Trump being president. I think you guys know me well enough, but the way my husband talks sometimes.
I court controversy, Blue Gal.
Let's teach the controversy, Driftglass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Controversial figure Jill Stein is personally responsible for the election of Donald Trump.
I was relaxing in my home with my feet up, reading my local newspaper, like I do to calm myself, to center myself, and open to the editorial page. And half the editorial page is Hugh Hewitt's fucking column.
Seriously, so today. That's
my,
today.
Today. Yeah. Today. My morning, you know, my usual morning ritual of reading George Pelicano about the destruction of Washington, D.C., and then crying a lot and then blogging for a while, was interrupted by Hugh Hewitt. So I turned, as I do often, for comfort to the Daily Beast. And there staring back at me is a story by Charles Davis. Jill Stein's recount cash pays for her Russian legal defense. Oh, gracious me. It seems that the millions and millions of dollars that Jill Stein collected, promising her donors they would have a say, they would be able to vote as to where that money came from. This was the recount money, the 2016 recount money. They apparently didn't get a vote. And she's been sort of dipping in there for all kinds of things, like paying campaign staff enormous amounts of money, traveling, things like that. I'm not surprised by this. I am surprised by people who are surprised by this. Mm-hmm. Every time I think we as a country are undertaxed, I look at the enormous amounts of money people throw into obvious shithole scams by people who are obviously there saying, send me money to save democracy. Yeah. And never, ever fucking deliver. And then they count on the fact that, well, there's a bunch of other shit that happened. Maybe someone won't notice the fact that I didn't deliver on anything I promised, but I did keep your money.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things that would otherwise, in a very swiftly moving river of madness, would have gone unmentioned. But I thought, hey, why not drop in a little something about Jill Stein at the end of the year? Because by this time next year, she will be forgotten.
One of the Crooky Awards. I'm writing Crooky Awards over at Crooks and Liars. We do our year-end filler posts on the awards of best and worst of the year. And one of them was the worst coverage of the midterms anywhere other than Fox was Steve Bannon doing his streaming, yeah. Where he kept reminding people on the air who were with him that he is producing this show.
Right.
And but he runs something called Citizens of the American Republic, which calls itself, yes, a social welfare organization. I think the social welfare is Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
And they are, quote, dedicated to making America great again via maximizing your, all caps, your citizenship value.
That's right. It's a value proposition, people.
So, of course, they're a 501c4.
Yes.
And as you say, proof positive that there is a definite problem with our tax code.
We have a lot of extra money floating around. not enough of which is flowing in my direction.
Well, we are not a 501c4, Driftglass, or a 501c3.
We could be Blue Cal. We could be
a 501 anything.
We could be a church. We could be a church tomorrow. I know the paperwork. We could be at the professional left church.
Oh my gosh.
We won't ask any questions.
No, I want to fund the deep state with my taxes, Driftglass. All of my taxes go to help pay the salaries of career prosecutors right now, yeah, in the FBI. I am paying.
This is where we diverge. I want a podcast where we can interview Leni Riefenstahl and only talk about like aspect ratios of film and never actually talk about the whole Nazi thing because that would make us uncomfortable. So,
yeah, we won't talk about the Nazi part. We just want to talk about aspect ratio.
Yeah. So, yeah. What do you think? What kind of lens do you use when you film, yeah, the Nazis that are underwriting all your shit?
Behind that angle, yeah, of Hitler.
Yeah, that's really good. Because let's face it, that's the kind of platform and podcast where there's big money in not asking people uncomfortable questions about their past affiliations and present affiliations. Seriously. With horrible, horrible groups of people.
Honestly.
You know, it's a nation of middle children who don't want to make anyone angry. And you know what? As I mentioned today on Twitter, it's been 30 years since Rush Limbaugh was syndicated. And it's been It's been 25 years since the GOP officially handed the party over to Gingrich and Limbaugh. And if you're a liberal with a public platform and you still haven't figured out how to take on conservatives, maybe you should get out of the business.
Yeah, go sell real estate. Yeah,
do something else.
Something.
There's a big, bright world.
There are other jobs out there for you besides, yeah, trying to put together a podcast. Who are we talking about, Driftglass?
We're talking about, well, as someone pushed back a little, not pushed back, but sort of smirked, I said, this is a criticism that can be broadly applied.
Yes, it is.
If you are a liberal sitting across from, let's say, a Michael Gerson or a David Brooks or Bret Stephens, and they're obviously, you know, jerking around the past and rewriting it to make it very convenient for them not to have to talk about their complicity, and you sit there and kind of nod and say, you know, my friend David makes a good point. My friend Bret makes a good point. You know, I think we have to disagree about this, but at least we're being civil about it. Then you're failing at liberalism. You're failing at doing your duty during this time of war, this time of conflict. If you want to be on this team, you have an obligation to actually step the fuck up and do what you can to push back against what you have already identified as a terrible cancer on our democracy. If you can't do it, fine.
Driftglass is living proof that you don't have to have David Brooks on your show.
No.
In order to provide a critique of David Brooks.
No.
All right. Driftglass, you have provided our listeners with an end of the year guessing game. Here are six news items, right?
We've scoured our archives from 1 year ago, and we've cleverly hidden one story from December of 2017 in among the following six stories. Can you guess which one?
All right. So we'll alternate with these. I'll read the odd ones. How about that?
You go right ahead.
All right. Trump claimed that he has signed more legislation than any other president at this point in their term. Trump has actually signed the fewest number of bills into law of any president at this point in his term, dating back to Eisenhower.
Number two.
All right. That's number one.
34% of senior Trump administrations have resigned, been fired, or been reassigned this year. It's the highest departure rate of any administration in the last 40 years.
All right. 44% of Republicans think Trump successfully repealed the Affordable Care Act.
Attacks on Mueller and the FBI are now constant as Trump uses his own GOP base exactly as it was designed to be used, as a mindless battering ram.
At a meeting on immigration, Trump said Haitians all have AIDS and complained that Nigerians would never go back to their huts in Africa.
And finally, in The Atlantic magazine, Connor Friedersdorf has decided that the never-Trumpers will be the only ones with the credibility to rebuild the GOP. Spoiler alert, never-Trumper David Frum is a senior editor at The Atlantic. Now, can you guess?
All right, so you did not, in our notes, you did not put which one it is.
No,
that
I didn't.
Is from last year.
I didn't.
But I'm going to guess.
You go right ahead, Blue Gal.
Because I know you.
Yes.
And I know what you're like. And I'll bet all of these are from last year.
They're all from last year. They're all from a fucking year ago. And they are absolutely indistinguishable from everything that's happening today.
They are.
They really are. You can just squint your eyes and see exactly this shit happening. You're not imagining it. Nothing has changed. Except an election happened.
Yes, an election happened, and that's going to bring a big change.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, Driftglass, let's do an actual news roundup.
Womp womp. Okay, fine. let's
hey, nobody else is doing it this week. We got to do one.
Well, I don't know. I Steve Kornacki will read numbers at you for an hour on MSNBC, which is very exciting.
You were funny last night when Steve Kornacki was, Republicans are happy and Democrats are unhappy.
Yes. I found a clip from Monty Python, Spectrum. This graph shows 20% of the people. This shows 34%. This is a whopping 48% of the people. Telling numbers indeed. And it was just Monty Python.
We say this with love, Steve Kornacki, because there's nobody like you on election night. We need you
there. We need you there. But when it comes to that sort of holiday period filler, had to turn away from.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Do you know Politico is whining about Hillary Clinton today?
Oh,
why won't she go away? Democrats are concerned.
Well, we should also mention that this is the time of the year when the Sydney Awards come out.
You mean David Brooks's Sydney Awards?
Yes, David Brooks's. I hesitate to point this out, but a decade ago, next month, Andrew Sullivan and I will have shared an award. Back when they gave awards for blogging.
Oh wow!
Yeah, this was the last year of the Weblog Award.
That's right, 2008, the Weblog. Right. Those were a big deal.
Those were a big deal. And Mr. Andrew Sullivan, who has since gone on to various forms of infamy, and never missed a meal. He's been hired and everywhere all the time. He was like best blogger, and I was best independent blogger, something like that.
Right.
And then I killed the award.
They couldn't give it anymore
fuck it. Screw it. We're done. Because it's hard work. You got to count votes. It's very complicated. So they stopped giving because blogging is dead, as we all know. So a decade later, I'm, me. And David Brooks, this was sort of a perfect Washington Beltway media moment.
It was.
You want to tell them what the...
Well, it was Axios' newsletter, highly recommended David Brooks's column recommending Andrew Sullivan.
Yes. who was awarded not one, as David Brooks said, which is rare indeed, but two of the coveted Sydney Awards that David Brooks does instead of writing actual columns at the end of the year. And one was for the opioid epidemic, which is fine. And one was for sort of the tribalism and how religion has fled our lives and we've replaced God with politics in our hearts, and how isn't that a terrible tragedy? Which is just a god-awful column that I knew would – and it was, of course, celebrated across a very narrow bandwidth of very wealthy people, all with columns and TV shows, et cetera, as as a glorious call to arms for, I don't know who the fuck would care, but the nine people who still believe that centrism is a thing.
Right, right. And I don't fault David Brooks for giving away awards at the end of the year, because we're doing that. Everybody does that. It is a notoriously slow news time between Christmas and New Year's, and that you have to do something, and looking back on the year is fine. But this was a real circle jerk is what it was.
Well, he was on book leave or whatever the hell it is when you take a month off, and he did come back long enough to declare that the center has been rediscovered and and mourn the death of the Weekly Standard. So apparently there are things for which David Brooks will break his vacation, one of which is talking about how awesome the Weekly Standard was and what a cruel, oppressive, one of the great monstrous acts of history, Blue Gal, all of history, that the Weekly Standard, where he was a senior editor and did some of his shittiest writing and slagged liberals for years, got bought and gutted. So,
He's very upset that the Weekly Standard was bought or gutted and destroyed, but he doesn't want anyone to go back and read anything and remind him of anything that he actually wrote at the Weekly Standard. So,
ain't I a stinker?
All right. Let's do a news roundup, Driftglass.
All right.
Trump is finally shamed into visiting American troops serving abroad and blows it in every way imaginable. Oh, my gosh. A partisan slander fest. He handed out shitty Trump hats. He lied to the troops about their pay raises as if they wouldn't know what was in their paychecks. Uh-huh. And apparently he tweeted a video revealing a covert U.S. Navy SEAL team deployed in Iraq, which broke combat operational security by posting the faces and location of the special operations unit. The government of Iraq has asked the American people to leave their country now based on Donald Trump's trip.
Yeah. So every which way you can fuck this up. Of course, this was a triumph. I'm sure Hugh Hewitt views this as a triumph. Van Jones, I keep waiting for Trump is now president. And we'll keep waiting. Yeah. The government shutdown, by the way, this is Friday. The St. Louis Arch was closed. We weren't planning on going there anyway, but we were informed that it was closed. And we said,
yeah, the arch was closed because the wall isn't being built.
Because that makes perfect sense. The government is shut down until whenever. Negotiations between Democrats, Republicans, and the White House. I love the I borrowed the sentence from someplace. Democrats, Republicans, and the White House, as if those are three different groups. They're not. Democrats and Republicans. It has left about 420,000 federal workers working without pay and another 300,000 furloughed straight up. And the St. Louis Arch, as I mentioned, was closed.
Trump lied again and claimed that most of the people not getting paid during the government shutdown are Democrats. This, to me, was one of the most stupid and heinous things that he did this weekend. He did a lot of horrible things. Yeah. I mean, he just must think his base are idiots.
Well, and he's right.
We've said that many times before.
I'm shutting down the country to own the libs.
Yeah. So many of them are Democrats. However, his previous lie was that many of the workers wanted him to shut down the government because they wanted the wall so badly. Yeah. So we don't know which it is, but I have a feeling he's just going to spew out whatever sounds good in his head.
It's neither. And
until as is the Republican strategy now, to wait until the Democrats take control to fix the problem. Right. And then they can blame the Democrats for anything they want to.
Let's all face it.
And if you have forgotten 2008, when there was an economic disaster that hit this country hard, and George W. Bush was asked about saving the
auto industry.
I haven't made up my mind yet.
Yeah. Well,
he said
John McCain suspended his campaign to sit on a lump on a log and do nothing. Mitt Romney
specifically said he didn't think that we should save the auto industry.
Shouldn't bail him out. Private capital should do that. And knowing that was never going to happen, I think he wanted to buy the auto industry for a dollar and just hope it would crash and he could afford to buy it. But Republicans just burned the place to the ground and then ran around in circles freaking out because guess what? I mean, even Al Greenspan finally said, I guess markets don't regulate themselves. I guess the last 50 years of my life and all the Ayn Rand bullshit I spew is actually bullshit. sorry about that, guys. And, you know, but
so waiting for the Democrats to take over is now the Republican strategy. Right.
So they can get back to doing what they do really well, which is sitting on the sidelines and bitching about everything, sabotaging everything Democrats tried to do with the able assistance of everyone in the fucking Beltway media, who will all agree not to remember anything that happened in the past. Trump's lawyers, this is so perfect, I don't even know what to say, asked to delay the emoluments case against him because the government is shut down.
Yeah.
Oopsie.
Acting Attorney General Matt Bench Jockey Whitaker claimed he was an academic All-American while playing football at the University of Iowa. He wasn't, but he had an opportunity to lie, so he took it.
Yes. Why skip that? As we mentioned, Michael Cohen's cell phone was briefly activated near Prague around the time the Russia meeting described in the Steele dossier. Once again, everything in the Steele dossier has either been verified or has not been knocked down. Most of the stuff in it has turned out to be correct. Yep.
Would you read the next one, please?
I will, because it's incredibly sad and it's infuriating. An 8-year-old boy from Guatemala died in U.S. custody and border protection custody. The second death of an immigrant child in the agency's care this month.
I
don't know what to say about that other than these fuckers have to go and they have to pay for this. They have to pay for this. They have to be held to account for this. This cannot be skipped. We can't keep pretending that they're just another political party that makes mistakes. They're sadistic by design. They're cruel by design. They're ignorant and racist by design. They built their political machine to do shit like this. And now that it's happening, too many people want to pretend this is some sort of fluke or accident or one-off. And it's not. It's who they are.
It is a deterrent. It is a deterrent for brown people to enter the United States. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. We'll kill your kid. Don't travel here because we will kill your kid. That's what they're saying. Yep. That is not my country.
No.
All right. The daughters of a foot doctor said their late father diagnosed Trump with bone spurs to help him avoid the Vietnam War as a favor to his father, Fred Trump.
Yeah. Anyone surprised?
He didn't have bone spurs?
Anyone? And that,
yeah. He faked it.
Yeah. It was a shitty excuse anyway, and he had to fake the shitty excuse. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump tried to ruin Christmas for a 7-year-old. You know, you think, what else can I fuck up? Hey, here's a thought. Kid calls in and asks
him. He doesn't know how to talk to children. And I get that. There's a lot of people out there that don't. So much of what's going on in this world right now is because Donald Trump doesn't listen to anybody but himself, his great brain.
Well,
if he had a staff that he would listen to, even a modicum of listening, do a little bit of listening, some of these things wouldn't happen.
Well, and you say he doesn't know how to talk to children. Who does he know how to talk to? Mobsters.
Well, that's true.
Mobsters and autocrats,
really.
He
doesn't know how to talk to women. He knows how to talk to sycophants. Yeah. That's it.
Dictators, sycophants, and mobsters. Yeah. He's really good at those things. Yep. And his base, who love him so very much.
But it doesn't matter what he says to them. They're going to love him because they can't be proven wrong either. All right. Trump has at least twice in the past few weeks lashed out to his acting attorney general, complaining that the prosecutors Matt Whitaker oversees filed charges that made him look bad. These charges against me make me look bad.
Matt, get in there. This is stupid.
By contrast, Bill Clinton's brief tarmac chat about grandchildren with Loretta Lynch was grounds enough for Republicans to launch hearing after hearing and demand her recusal.
Yeah, but that happened when? In the past, which doesn't exist. So let's not talk about it or worry about it or in any way draw a contrast between the two, because that might make our Republican friends uncomfortable. The incoming acting chief of staff said Donald Trump now realizes that he, quote, does not have the authority to fire the Federal Reserve chairman. Oopsie doopsie. Mick Mulvaney claimed that, quote, it's not at all unusual for a president to complain about the actions of the Fed. That's true. However, Trump broke a 25-year tradition of presidents refraining from making public comments on Fed interest rates Fed interest rate moves to preserve its independence. So, you know,
he also said that the only problem with our economy is the Fed.
Yeah, I can think of one other problem.
Trump directed Mike Pompeo to fire Jim Mattis after the defense secretary had already resigned. Yeah. He's leaving next week instead of in February because all of a sudden Trump found out on the TV.
Yeah.
He didn't read the resignation letter that Mattis wrote. Yeah. He just found out it was embarrassing to him on the TV.
Wait a minute.
And then wanted him to leave 2 months earlier.
When he said fuckface, he meant me? Oh, that's it. That's it. We're done. Because he's illiterate. He doesn't read anything. Yeah. He doesn't know anything.
I think he's got a vision problem and he won't wear glasses. I think that's the problem.
I think he's got a comprehension problem too. I really don't think he doesn't understand.
He's not mentally there. Yeah.
Yeah. The Supreme Court rejected, the Trump administration's request to automatically reject asylum bids by immigrants who illegally cross the U.S.-Mexico border. It's a small victory, but we will take small victories now.
We will take small victories, and by one vote in the state Senate, Ohio upheld the veto that was going to make abortion illegal, essentially, in the state of Ohio.
Yeah.
The state House overturned the governor's veto, and it was just going to be overturned. But one vote in the Senate, in the state Senate in Ohio, saved it. And like you say, small victories. Steve Mnuchin took his trophy wife to Mexico during the shutdown.
Yes.
And from vacation in Mexico, called the heads of major banks to check on their liquidity and let them know everything's okay. Please don't crash the markets while I'm gone. Having a vacation with my trophy wife in Mexico while the government is shut down over the wall with Mexico that Mexico is supposed to pay for.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah. It's, dude, I don't mean to cause panic, but do you have like a lot of money laying around, like a whole lot of money laying around? Because that'd be really great if you had like a shitload of money laying around just in case, I don't know, something might happen. Not saying it will, just saying I'm in Mexico with my trophy wife. And if shit hits the fan, maybe it would be a good idea to have a big mountain of money laying around just in case.
Also, Trump floated the idea of firing Mnuchin to fix the stock market.
Yeah, because what he knows how to do is fire people. He's really good at firing people.
He doesn't have to send someone else to fire
people. He's really good at passively aggressively bitching. He really is every conservative. He's really good at talking shit about people behind their back. And when it comes to actually doing something, he jobs it out to someone else because he's a fucking coward. You know, old Bone Spurs is a coward. Ah, shocking, isn't it?
We want to take a moment and thank everyone for all of your support this year. We love you. Happy New Year. May 2019 be better than 2018 in every way. And do you have anything else you want to add to that, Driftglass?
Just how delighted we are with all the feedback we get, whether it's over the transom or through the post office box or email or text or whatever. All of the support we get, all the checking I get. I had a listener tell me that the Brock's Candy not Brock's Candy, I'm sorry, the movement of Ferrara Pan to the post office in Chicago, which I did mention, was not exactly as I reported it to be. It was an executive move, and the workers are still on the bubble. So believe me, I am deeply impressed with the precision with which we are listened to and how often we are corrected. We love our pedants, and we love our atheists. And our critics as well. And we deeply appreciate your support, however, whatever form it comes in. We know that a lot of you listen to us when you're out in a red state all by yourself, or when you're exercising or out walking your dog or out with your cat. We hope you're not ignoring your family to listen to the podcast. But we understand that some families kind of suck, so maybe you have to take time away from them. Yeah. And we're just incredibly happy and grateful, and still considering this is our – let me check to make sure. This is our 473rd consecutive Friday episode of The Professional Left. We have no intention of slowing down. Despite what my voice might sound like now, this is all temporary. And we look forward to a wonderful and exciting and probably maddening and exhausting and et cetera 2019 with y'all. And if you know anybody who's looking for a good podcast, slide our name their way.
Yeah, we love it when you share our show, one-on-one or on the social media. Thank you for doing
that. Our show grows organically. We don't have any other media outlets promoting us. We don't have presence anywhere on television or any other radio station. This is just us.
We don't have a marketing budget.
No.
Either. So you're our marketing team, yeah. Along with Tammy, our angel nerd who does
the
Lord's work for us. So thank you. And happy new year. We're looking forward to 2019 with you. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website at Internet Kitty, sent in by you, the listeners. This week we have two beautiful internet kitties, Rigby and Blaze. They are orange kitties. Par excellence, you have to go visit them, Rigby and Blaze, at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go, Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is not a 501c3. This is our job.
There are many good 501c3s out there, just so we're clear.
There
sure
are. There are some really good charities out there.
Yeah.
But this is just our job. We do this for you. We appreciate it if you can support the show with a $5 contribution. Approximately one half of 1% of you donate to this podcast, and we so appreciate it. If you haven't done that yet, you still can. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. We have PayPal. We have a postal address. We have Patreon. We have all kinds of things. We have had a letter from one of our longtime listeners asking us, doing some financial planning for the year ahead, and asking us what's the best way to donate in terms of fees and so forth, and making sure we get the most bang for their buck. And the deal is, whatever is easiest for you. There are some people who send us a check from their bank account and pay us like a monthly bill and send us $5 in a check form. That gets the full $5 to us. If you use PayPal, or if you use Patreon, or if you use GoFundMe, they take a fee, obviously, in order to send us the money. But those fees are tax-deductible business expenses for us. So you're not really, you're costing us a lot in terms of, if that's easier for you, we're happy to take that as well. So whatever's easiest for you is the way to do it. Thank you. Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter or any other social media, and we thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Cow, the internet kitties are looking forward to David Brooks milking the whole Grover thing into at least three columns on tribalism and the decline of American culture. And the internet kitties wish you a happy new year.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2018, DGBG Productions Incorporated.